We'll be reading today from Hebrews chapter 8, verses 1 through 4. The book of Hebrews chapter 8. Let's begin reading in verse 1. Now of the things which we have spoken, this is the sum. We have such an high priest, who is set on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary, and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched, and not man. For every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices, whereof it is of necessity that this man have somewhat also to offer. For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law. Now the writer in this chapter is drawing to a conclusion what he's been saying for chapters. He's been telling us that Jesus is our great high priest, that Jesus is greater than all these other Old Testament characters, and since he's a different kind of priest than the high priest in Israel, then that means that his role and his duties are different. So these verses begin a discussion of that role. Now you see, up to Hebrews chapter 7, verse 12, his main point was to show that Jesus is our high priest, a high priest like Melchizedek, not like the high priest that came from Levi. But in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 12, he says that if you're going to change the priesthood, you have to change the law along with it. And so in that verse, he begins to unfold the logical consequences of that change. The fact that we have a different law. Because he said there that the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. But when he says that the law has been changed, that means that everything else changed with it. And so, in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 1, he tells us that the sum of the things that he's talking about is that Jesus is our high priest. The word sum in the King James Version of verse 1 is a word that we've discussed many times, and it means the main point. The New King James Version uses the words the main point. And this simply means that everything that he's been talking about comes down to this. This is the chief idea. This is the central theme of this book. Jesus is our high priest. Everything else connects to or flows from that one point. But he tells us in verses 1 and 2 something very important about Jesus being the high priest. We've already seen that there are differences between Jesus' priesthood and the priesthood of these Levites. He's already drawn some differences and distinctions between those kinds of priests. But now he's going to make a point which is very obvious to us in one way, but it's a very important point for us to consider as far as the consequences are concerned in another way. And that is that Jesus is a high priest in heaven, not a high priest on earth. Now again, we look at that and we say, well, that's obvious. We know that. But do we really realize what that involves? You see, that was different for the Jews to consider. That was a different idea. Because Jesus is a priest who is not at the temple offering animal sacrifices. He didn't even do that while he was on the earth. He couldn't do that lawfully. But the image that the Jews had in their mind of a priest was a man who was standing at the temple. But Jesus is not on earth. He's not on earth, much less at the temple, and yet he is our high priest. He's at the right hand of the throne of God, the Father, which is a place of honor. It's a position of authority. But I want you to notice what he goes on to say in verse 2 about Jesus being this kind of high priest while he's in heaven. He says that Jesus is a minister of the sanctuary. Every priest is a minister, and so Jesus is a minister because a priest had to perform these services. He is a minister of the sanctuary. Now, literally, That means that he is a minister of the holy things. That would be the most literal translation of what is in the original here. The Old Testament priest ministered at the temple, and before that, at the tabernacle. Because it was at the tabernacle, and then later at the temple, that you had the altar, the incense, the showbread, and these other items. So they served there, they ministered at the tabernacle continually. The tabernacle was a holy place. That's the idea of the word sanctuary. You can see the resemblance and the similarity between the word sanctuary and the word sanctified, and other words also like the word saints. The tabernacle was a sanctified place. That simply means that it was a holy place because God had specifically chosen that sanctuary or that tabernacle in a certain city. And that city, of course, was Jerusalem. And so the people were to offer their sacrifices there, not elsewhere. And so, as you read the Old Testament, you're going to find that the tabernacle and the temple are often called the sanctuary in that Old Testament. But I do want to add here that a church building is never called a sanctuary in the New Testament. In fact, the New Testament doesn't even specifically mention church buildings, much less refer to church buildings as sanctuaries. The sanctuary that we're talking about here was the Old Testament temple or the Old Testament tabernacle. And what we're seeing here in the book of Hebrews is that the Old Testament tabernacle represented the fulfillment of that tabernacle, which of course is something spiritual. And that's why he talks about, in verse 2, the true tabernacle. In verse 2, he says that Jesus was a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle. The Jews at this time still had the temple. It was still standing. It was still in use. They thought that it was the true and the real sanctuary. That building was an elaborate, beautiful building. It was famous throughout the world, and it was the central meeting place in the Jews' religion. But it was not the true tabernacle, not in the real sense. It was not that building. Well, if the temple in Jerusalem was not the true tabernacle, then what was? And what is? Well, he tells us that the true tabernacle was pitched by the Lord. The word tabernacle is a word for tent. And so when you talk about pitching a tent, the Lord pitched this tabernacle. Men constructed and put up the Old Testament tabernacle. But this tent or tabernacle was not put up or constructed by man. It was pitched by the Lord himself and not man. It was not man-made. Now, you'll remember back in the Old Testament, in Daniel chapter 2, that Daniel says that the kingdom that was prophesied of there came from a stone that was cut out without hands. That is, without human hands. That means that kingdom was spiritual. It was from God. This tabernacle is spiritual. This tabernacle was not made with hands because the Lord made it. So that means that the true tabernacle here is spiritual, not physical. And that can only mean that the tabernacle that he's talking about here, which he calls the true tabernacle, must be the church. Now with this, he begins to draw parallels between the Old Testament and the New Testament. In the Old Testament, you had the physical. In the New Testament, you have the spiritual fulfillment. And so in the Old Testament, you had priests. These priests were priests in a physical sense on the earth. They had descended by flesh and blood from Levi. But Jesus Christ is a high priest in heaven, not on earth. And he had a spiritual likeness and has a spiritual likeness to the priesthood of Melchizedek. He's the fulfillment of that type. In the Old Testament, you had a physical place, a physical building, a tabernacle. But in the New Testament fulfillment, you have a spiritual tabernacle, the church. In the Old Testament, you had physical animals that were offered as sacrifices. But in the New Testament, you have the Son of God Himself, the Lamb of God, who fulfilled all of those Old Testament shadows and types. And so the Old Testament had the shadows. The New Testament has the things themselves. And so in verses 3 and 4, he continues to draw this parallel between the offerings made by the Levitical priest and the offering made by Jesus Christ. In verse 3, he said, "For every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices." That was the main work of priest. The main work of the priest was to offer gifts and sacrifices. The people brought the sacrifice or the offering, but the priest actually made the offering. Not even the king himself in the Old Testament had the authority to offer a sacrifice. And his point is simply this. If a priest offers sacrifices and Jesus is a priest, then Jesus had to offer something. He says, "It is of necessity that this man, Jesus, have somewhat also to offer." He mentioned back in chapter 5, verse 3, that priests do offer sacrifices. In chapter 5, verse 3, he said, "And by reason hereof, he," that is the priest, "ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins." But he didn't elaborate on it there. He didn't apply that to Jesus. He just planted the thought. And this is something that is very common in this book of Hebrews. He will plant the seed, and he will come back later and nurture that and develop that thought. If Jesus then is the high priest, he had to have something to offer. And we know what that was. But put yourself in the shoes of these people. Put yourself in the position of these Christians. Had they really considered what Jesus offered in contrast to what the Jewish priests were offering? At the time this epistle was first written, the temple was still standing. The priests were offering these sacrifices, and these Jewish Christians knew that that was taking place. They had been used to seeing this for years and years. And in the minds of most of those Jews, they could not imagine that ever stopping. And so, did they really consider what the Hebrews writer is saying? That Jesus is the real high priest. Jesus' offering of himself is the true offering. And that the church is really the true tabernacle of God. And it's even more obvious from verse 4 that the temple was still standing. And that this book was written before AD 70. Because in verse 4, he says, "There are priests that offer gifts according to the law." So this book was written prior to AD 70, and of course it does warn about that calamity, and we'll get to that later. But he says in verse 4, if he, that is, if Jesus were on earth, he should not be a priest. He could not be a priest according to the law, because there were already priests who were making these sacrifices and offering these sacrifices, but those priests were from the tribe of Levi. Jesus was not from that tribe, and so he could not be a priest under that system. So look at these words again and let them sink into your mind. If he were on the earth, if Jesus were on earth, he should not be a priest. Now here's a question to consider in light of that statement. The doctrine of a future thousand-year reign of Christ on earth says that Jesus will come back and be king on earth. That means that he would have to stop being our high priest. And so here's the question. How then can Jesus be, as the Hebrews writer tells us, a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek?